How are you going to lead men into war if you can't even lead your own wife?
Mm-hmm.
It's like you have to lead her with love, with understanding, with empathy, but you have to lead her. If you can't do that, if she's always right, it means that you're avoiding conflicts just to be able to, you're not in your integrity as a man. Jordan Peterson has called for a need to rediscover the spirit of the father. Many have been inspired to embark on their own hero's journey to set their life in order. But how do we balance order and chaos to live a life of meaning? What does it actually mean to be surrendered to God? And how do we root ourselves to stable ground as we witness the re-enchantment of reality? At Manifesto, we're engaged on a mission to rediscover and understand manhood, and from this foundation to create a dynamic and thriving community. My name's Paul. Welcome to Manifesto. Patrick, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Paul.
Yeah, so you came along with a group of Swiss guys to the European Men's Gathering in Denmark this year, just over 2 weeks ago, and participated. And we had a couple of really great exchanges over there, and even more so after the event as well. Mm-hmm. And I actually didn't realize before the event, but you're running a whole network of men's work professionals in Switzerland. There's a website which we'll put in the link in the description, and also put together some of the best reflections on the event I've seen so far, in a great article about the healing of the patriarch, I think was the title in English. So I was thinking, how about you start us off with telling us a little bit about the Swiss Men's Network, what it's about, how it started. And we can take it from there.
Mm-hmm. So it was on my own journey that I, there were some guys doing men's work, and I did some tryouts. I went a little bit there, a little bit there, to find my own style and method in all this, what would suit me. Mm-hmm. And I heard them saying the same things, knowing each other from far away, but not talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that's a pity, because if we share a vision, why don't we share energy and put our energy together? And right then I got to know two guys that had exactly the same idea as I did.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did then, I would put up a Zoom meeting and invite everybody in men's work I know, and see who's coming.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there were 12 or 14 guys coming to this first Zoom, and we would explain them the idea, also telling them we don't know how, but it's just we want to follow this. And then last year in spring, there were 8 men coming to a weekend seminar, which the purpose was to look to find a common vision.
Mm-hmm.
For this, what was already at that weekend, Männernetzwerk Schweiz, which means Swiss Men's Network.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a vision that is today still very strong.
Mm-hmm.
So the translation would be, thanks to Swiss Men's Network, open-hearted men take full responsibility of their actions and their feelings, and for the life for the next 7 generations. So mm-hmm. that's an important part, because first taking responsibility for yourself, but if we talk about the archetype, the king, we would take responsibility also for the future generations. So it's your responsibility expands.
Mm-hmm.
And this
open-hearted men take full responsibility for their own feelings and actions.
Yes.
For themselves and the next 7 generations. Yeah, that's a powerful statement. I really like that. Yeah. Yeah. I love the future perspective as well. It goes far beyond the known. Like whatever we know about the next 7 generations is going to be unrecognizable for us. but so we have to, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There is this saying, only a man who would plant a tree knowing he would never sit in his shadow has at least a little bit started to understand the meaning of life. And that's exactly that. Mm-hmm. And so we came together and on a, let's say, on a more concrete perspective, we had the vision to create a platform. Mm-hmm. So there are men doing men's work, but to be honest, coaches are not the best marketing guys normally. There are some exceptions, but most of them are not. Mm-hmm. And we realized we have big resources. It's not on. So I'm coming originally from a marketing area, and there is other guys who have quite some experience in building up communications campaigns and so on. Mm-hmm. So there are the facilitators on one side, and there are the men being unhappy and feeling a lack of something, feeling weak or disorientated in today's world where these old roles of men and women kind of vanish. And they look for something, but they don't know where to look, and nobody knows about men's work. Mm-hmm. So we thought, let's bring these two things together. By merging energies, we would create a platform and start to make even men's work known in society. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're doing today. We're growing steady, not like going through the roof, but it's every week we have a few more followers, we have a few more comments, we have a few more feedbacks. And it's starting that the men's facilitators start to realize that they're better off, they have more success, more people attending their seminars if they work together with us than then if they do it on their own. And that was the goal.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is very similar to the approach and philosophy of Manifesto. I've kind of said many, many times, like, you know, there's a, if what we're doing is right, And it is, and we do have some solutions for the problems that we're trying to tackle, if it's actually working, then the market out there is massive. The need is massive. Mm-hmm. So what it is really, it's the problem, you know, the problem is that there's all these small little kings and their small little kingdoms, and they're fighting with the neighboring kings. And they're so focused on their developing their own little thing that there's no perspective for the bigger picture. Yeah. And so by banding together, we get to work through the kind of, you know, impurities and all the kind of, you know, difficulties that we're facing on our own little things, and inspire each other and learn from each other. And then we start actually being able to look at, like, okay, well, expanding our vision to not just fighting for customers on a day-to-day basis, but what's actually happening out there in society, and how can we be taking those bigger conversations? Because it's not easy to actually make sure you're a part of the solution and not a part of the problem, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's easy to think you're doing the right thing, mm-hmm. And to rationalize it, but to not fully understand the full situation. And I really believe the power of coming together, a group of guys who are talking straight and honest to each other, is,
yes,
yeah, a necessity for doing that.
So one big milestone was the first Swiss men's gathering this mm-hmm. spring.
This spring, 2022.
Yeah. Mm. And we had 50 men together, mm-hmm. which is good. And a lot of them were already facilitators. And that was also our goal. So we would address them with kind of, and the subtext, are you ready to jump over competitive behavior and start to connect as a community? And the title was Creating the Inner Circle. Mm-hmm. Because we have the vision that 2-3 years from now, we will have a Swiss men's gathering with probably 1,000 or 2,000 men. So a step to get there is to create an inner circle that can hold this space for the other men. So each man has to be capable of holding and somehow also leading 10 other men that are new to this. They're just beginning their journey. And yeah, next year, hopefully, we set our goal that we will have 120 participants. And it was an amazing experience. Also for me to facilitate this, to stand there and just see these things happening. You know, it felt like it's not me. It's just, it's the time for it now. And also you can see that also the media coming now, like state television contacting us, wanting to do documentaries. I just have a friend. He was asked by Arte, which is a very good German TV channel, and they want to have him for a documentation on men's work. And the Swiss state TV is doing the same thing. So I think the time is ready. The time is now for these, for this men's work, and also from men's work on a higher level to reconnect with the women also on a new level.
Okay. It's fascinating and exciting journey. There's definitely different things happening in different countries. In Manifesto, so we've been going since, you know, like we had our first big gathering in 2017, 5 years ago. So this was the sixth EMG that we held. And I've been contacted by a lot of journalists, and a lot of them are looking for two different stories. One of them is either like guys who are out there saying like, oh, men are terrible, and like da da da, and telling about all the bad things about men and how men need to change and become more in touch with their emotions generally and stuff like that as well. Or they want like kind of like the really aggressive ultra right wing or, you know, nationalist men who are kind of like, you know, that are, yeah. And so when they realize that we're neither of those two things, they kind of say like, well, great, what you guys are doing is really fantastic, beautiful, but it's not the story that we're looking to tell right now. And yeah. I guess that's just been the thing in Denmark, because I have this exact same feeling as you, like, the time is really ready, and then it's just a question of being patient. And I think some countries are going to go before others as well. It certainly seems to me, when I look at the work you guys are doing, I look at the website, that you guys have a good touch on explaining this. And it could be that, you know, I hate marketing. I really don't like it. And we don't have anybody with us who's like into that field. So maybe that's, because there is a need for that kind of packaging. We have to engage with that world as well, right? So
yeah, it's like translating it, you know. Marketing is always connected to manipulate people, and a lot of marketing is manipulating people. But it depends on your values and ethics. So there is also the possibility to transfer what you really want to say, so that it arrives more or less in the way you meant it at the perceiver. So I'd call it kind of honest marketing, honest communication. And I think you also, what my experience is, if you speak up, if you tell your message honestly, it's not like less people not agreeing to it. Because it's so simple wisdom in the end. And even if some people feel triggered, you see in their behavior that somehow it kind of also nourished them. And we had the same experience as you said. We had there was a short documentary last year, and this woman would come. Her title was the Suffering Man, and she wanted to kind of show, to display the men as victims of the women's movement. So we told her, look, you will not find men that are suffering. You will find men that go their way and do their, clean their closet and take responsibility. So she said, yeah, that's really cool, that's really okay. But what she showed in the end, you know, where how she cut the quotes was, again, suiting her agenda, and it kind of upset us. We felt kind of violated, I'd say, because it was not our messages. But then we let it go, and we also realized that the men and the women that are ready to understand the real message will understand it anyway. And in the end, also bad news is good news. And we had some people reaching out to us. And now the same journalist is again here asking us and saying, yeah, I got my lesson and I want to do it differently. So she wants.
Well, good. I think this is a journey for a lot of people. So being able to engage in a long-term relationship with a journalist and allow the story to unfold, I think that's certainly... valuable. And that's what I've been looking for as well. I've realized like that's what it's going to take is to someone who wants to go in like a learning process with you somehow, right?
So how is this regarding journalism, media? How is the situation today in Denmark with the work you're doing?
I've so far, it's very much under the radar. I don't engage with that. I even have like a real strong love-hate relationship with social media. Mm-hmm. So we've really done like personal network, mouth-to-mouth kind of guys bringing along people they know. And then, you know, we have a website. I have a Facebook page where I put out stuff, but I struggle with myself every single time I have to put stuff out there. And I realize it's, you know, it's something that's necessary. So it is difficult. I don't have, that's not what we're experts in Manifesto at all. But I think that's something that I believe is more necessary as well on a national level, for people who are engaging in a specific country, right? We've been trying to create a European platform. And there were, it's from the beginning been very much addressed towards facilitators and trying to do this knowledge exchange and kind of find, I really see it as we're creating the possibility for the market and for the understanding of what men's work is. It's been for me the most powerful personal journey as well to be able to engage in that. So it's been, and luckily it's just been enough to kind of like, you know, pay the bills and to keep things going and to be able to work with some really interesting guys as well. But it's still really a fledgling time. And I think what's really exciting is the kind of stuff that you guys are doing. Slovakia just had their first big national gathering. There's a group of guys who are organizing something in Poland coming up very soon. We've done a gathering in Holland. So that's where I really see the explosion, because also, like, I don't know if you guys are doing it, but right, doing an event right next to a big city also just opens up, or inside a big city, opens up so much more possibilities. We do our gathering far out in the countryside. It was like crazy difficult. I don't know how far you had to travel to get there, but it was really difficult to get there internationally.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. For us. And we do that because we actually want to make it difficult. We want people to kind of have to go apart from their everyday life and mm-hmm. put on a new lens of seeing society and culture and their connection with other guys as well.
And no distraction. Yeah.
Yeah. Without the distractions. Yeah. Yeah. So, I think the future is more in like big city conferences where you can just like drop in and, you know, like, you know, come a little bit, come and go as well, if you need to do that. And you know, just give more people an easy introduction to the work. That's I think where the real expansion is. And so far, that hasn't been what's been driving us. I think we've been interested in going deep. What I've already seen is like, this is such a big problem. So I'd rather assume I don't know how to solve it yet. And to do it well, I need to go on a journey with a smaller group of guys and learn how to do it well. So that's kind of been what we've been doing. And developed really powerful relationships so far doing that. And then seeing how can we be helping each other to be then going out and doing that in different places as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's influenced my life. You know, I've now moved out into the Danish countryside, far away from everything, in a very old farm. Appreciating the space and the time to be withdrawn from the hustle and bustle of, like, I lived 19 years in Copenhagen. So
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good. So what was it like then, Patrick? You came over with some other guys from Switzerland and met people from all over the world. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you experienced? Of course, you've written this article. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we want to pull out a couple of things from there and talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were actually, I didn't know about Manifesto until one guy, Gregor, that in the end came with me from Switzerland, mentioned it. And I looked at your website and it kind of was exactly what I was looking for. There were two main, I didn't even check that much. I just had two main topics. That was initiation and leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt this need or this wish of finishing or processing my initiation, because I realized that I never had it properly.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like there is still this belly line somewhere going somewhere. It has not been cut off totally yet. So, and I realized I'm ready now, and that's the next step I want to take. And so I just came, yeah, sure, not consciously expecting anything. And somehow, yes, you do always expect something. And yeah, how I wrote in the article, it was really already in the beginning on the, I think the morning of the second day, it was really interesting how this picture came. So there were you three guys, you as what I call a charismatic leader, and the ex-NATO soldier. So we have the leader, we have the military, and then there was the third guy, which was kind of the brain. And so it's the strategic, the think tank. So we have the state here. And then there were the elders, you know, and it kind of hit me that we have a small, like it kind of reminded me of Animal Farm, the book. We have a small mirror of society and our history, because on the other hand, we had the church.
Mm-hmm.
So one managing like the worldly stuff, and the other hand managing the beliefs. And yeah, that was kind of, for me, it was like, okay, wow, that's interesting. And then we got into this war scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And for my personal journey, I had some milestones during that day. The first one was when my team was winning in the first challenge, the three patriarchs would start to cheat and kind of motivate and enforce the other group to cheat. So that hit me somehow. And the first thing I did afterwards is speak up to my team and say, hey, guys, okay, now this cheating happened. What are we going to do? Because honestly, I rather lose than go on that level. And because I didn't know at that point, but our general Christian said, yeah, that's each one's individual decision, because I would have spoiled or ruined, it would have ruined the game if we suddenly, like as a team, would stand up and say, no, we play fair. And I kind of, for me, there was the journey to say, next time I would be more determined. No, I will not go on if we don't decide that as a team. And that was an important lesson for me. And yeah, then we got to this evening, to this ritual.
Maybe let's just stop there, Patrick, because I have a couple of comments that I wanted to add in there as well. So yeah, I mean, one of the things we try and do is to break the illusion in people that the world is fair and should be fair, and that the rules are neutral and everybody gets an equal chance. Like this is something that I think our mothers try and give us, this idea that everything should be fair, right? But but the reality is that normally the game's rigged in some direction, at least a little bit, you know. Like in the West, we largely do not have corruption and we largely you know, at least not blatant corruption.
In other ways.
It's in other ways. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And certainly the game is tilted in a specific direction, and there's very, very strongly vested power interests everywhere where you're going to be. Mm-hmm. And so it was interesting for us, and this worked really well this year. I actually really loved it, even though I really appreciate your perspective. So it's like, you know, what we do is we interfere unfairly with the rules. We set some rules and then we break them ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then we see how people react, and we don't really care how they react. We're just more interested in how they then reflect on how they reacted afterwards. So we want people to react in different ways, right? Mm-hmm. As you said, mm-hmm. What we do want to do is to get every man to feel his edge. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that frustrates me as, you know, a South African moving to very, very safe Europe from a fairly unsafe society, mm-hmm. is just how, I would say, passive men are, mm-hmm. especially in dangerous situations. Mm-hmm. A lot of them will step back and observe, even take out their mobile phones and like film somebody getting attacked, someone having a heart attack, or something like that, but not actually say like, hey, someone is, there's needed for some action now, and I'm going to step in and do something about it. Mm-hmm. And so part of what we're doing that day is try to like, you know, like wake people up a little bit and get them to like, say like, hey, something's happening here that's not right. What are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. And what you'll see is that some men have a very strong moral compass that will guide their actions, and they'll have such a strong moral compass. And this is what I think in our conversation we had on the third day, it was very clear to me that you got this at the event. It's that's like, well, your moral compass can become so strong that you can not only guide yourself, but you can also, even in resistance, and even if you're in the minority, you can still take leadership. And you can do that irrespective of what's popular or not, you know? So it's not just about, because the vast majority of men, they go with the flow, mm-hmm. right? So they just follow with what the majority is doing. Mm-hmm. But exactly how to do that and how you should have done it in that specific exercise, that's really, really difficult, because like an injustice was happening, but does that mean that you then have to start going, you know, do you just stop the injustice by force? Or do you also go and interfere with the other and like, you know, play the same game as well, which ended up what was happening, right? And so actually we were right on the edge there of like, mm-hmm. being on chaos. Mm-hmm. And it was actually in some ways scary, and in some ways a really beautiful dance that was happening, mm-hmm. where men were actually looking out for each other and supporting each other in exploring their edges. Or I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah, you raised a few topics. So what I wrote down is reality. Just on a general perspective, it could be something we go into. You said most men by their mother have been taught that, it is a fair game, and it isn't. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree on you on that. So it's like not want to look at the shadows of reality. I have positive thinking, so everything's going to be all right. No, it's not that. It's a shadow work and it's light work. But at the same time, I realized that the other movement or the other reaction that I see with a lot of men is that's mostly right-wing politics. They say, okay, the reality is like that, so I don't have to be different. If that's reality and that's humanity and I'm a part of humanity, and even if humanity sucks, I'm going to suck too, you know, like then it's not taking over responsibility. Yeah. And
especially not for the perpetuation of the negative patterns that have been leading us to destruction. It's like saying like, oh, well, everybody else is doing this, so I'm just going to do the same thing as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's a.
And that's very, probably very what good. You meant with going with the flow. So everybody's throwing stones. So yeah, I'm going to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think what kind of makes the, or what helps you in this moment is if you had experienced being an outsider for at some part of your life, like being bullied or being all alone, all very heavy experiences, but you learned that even if you're completely alone, you will still survive. So there is something that might give you some stability or integrity at that moment. But I appreciate you like giving these compliments to me, but I don't agree with you with taking the responsibility. Yeah, I spoke up at that point, but that was easy because we were a team, we were together. For me, a crucial point that was probably the main lesson was in the evening. Similar situation. So everybody would do something, and you called it the inner compass of moral or ethics, would come up and tell me, no, I don't want to do that. So, and I walked away. I said, okay, no, I'm going to save my integrity. It doesn't feel right. So I walk away. And then for a second, I felt good. Haha, you're so good. Yeah, no, went your way. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I felt so badly because I realized, oh shit. And that's what we were talking about. To take responsibility, integrity and responsibility are not the same. Mm-hmm. Because taking responsibility would be to risk your own life now in a real situation and stand in front of these people being stoned and say, stop, and at least ask this crowd, do you really want to do this? Do you really want, I mean, okay, you got this scene in the Bible, actually. So the story is there. Do you really want to have blood on your hands? I think Jesus asks, if there's one of you without sins, please throw the first stone or something like that. Yeah. And I realized, at least for me, that's what I would wish to do in a next similar situation. Mm-hmm. And I also had to realize, no, I'm not there. I wish I was there, but the reality showed you, no, you're not. And so that brought me in a deep process, and I had a beautiful core team that helped me. Because the next day they would come to me and say, we are disappointed at you because you didn't fight. And you know, you were one of the best. Mm-hmm. You didn't take responsibility. And it destroyed me. I cried like a baby. Mm-hmm. And that helped me realize that I actually am copying some behavior of my father that I still feel like a victim of. And I think that's, now we're getting right in there. I was lucky to have a team that supported me, a core group, so that I could integrate, I could heal this part of my story. Mm-hmm. And really change. Mm-hmm. Now I'm sure, I know it. The security or the it's there that I will behave differently in the next situation. But first, and that's what you said, you had to bring me to the edge. Mm-hmm. So you said this limit. So there is a stress zone, and there is the zone where it's too much and you can't process it anymore. So it's very, very difficult to be just at that border, to step a little bit into overwhelming and coming back into stress zone where you can handle it. And then going into it and kind of realize what is really happening here. So this situation, what my feelings are not even from this situation, they're somewhere from my childhood where I'm 7 years old. And now I have the opportunity to heal that. So kind of to rewrite history, mm-hmm. retrospective. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the enormous potential that we have when we bring men in such extreme situations. Yeah. And I think there's still some potential regarding that.
Absolutely. And thank you, Patrick. I mean, I'm very touched by your description of what you experienced. And what happened there, it's a very, very beautiful thing. And more and more, I also see it as like, it's an act of grace. It's not something I can create. I don't have the ability to make that happen because there's so many things that need to come together. So we can draw on some old traditions and some understanding of some things that are far more ancient than anything we understand. And we can try and, you know, put together some of these structures that our forefathers have done. And then we can try and be the best man that we can be in that situation. And then, you know, like for me, that's the kind of story that, you know, I live and breathe for and do this work for, because I see it happening. And I also increasingly see how it creates that shift in a man, in the way he orientates himself in his life and what he does afterwards. And because that's what really counts, right? Because one thing is having a strong experience and crying and being held and having a lot of hugs and things like that. Great, it's beautiful. But it's what you go home and do after that as well. And so it's about bringing about those kinds of insights of, well, you know, yeah, and a lot of it is about like, you know, the change starts with me. Those are the kinds of things I believe that, and I've seen it with so many guys. It's like when they have that, then you can't not act on that anymore as well, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that.
So it's like bringing them in a situation where they cannot escape.
I think people can always escape. Like I think that they have to want to do it. I think it really, and so there's many, many defense mechanisms that come in. Mm-hmm. So you see a lot of defense mechanisms. The primary one I see outside of the EMG is often just politics. So people will bring up some political ideology that they'll then use to object to something about something you said that's not really central to what you're doing. And then there'll be this big intellectual political discussion, mm-hmm, and it won't go anywhere. So that's why I'm like, I really try and keep politics out of everything we're doing. Because for me, that's the biggest defense mechanism, is people have based their identity on some kind of limiting ideology. And so, you know, like, as you said, like the right wing guys, they'll, you know, it's like that politics is just two people who are half right, half wrong. And they attack each other about the other half of everything. And you know, they're both have some truth and both have something that they don't see completely. You know, all of us have that. Politics just made it into a system which can never be resolved, because, you know, you're based on ideologies that don't describe reality.
Based on ideologies that describe reality.
That do not describe reality. No. I mean, that's my view on politics, is like, it's a system which will just perpetually go around. I mean, you can kind of see it very roughly. This is a big generalization, but, you know, like if you're on the right wing, it's primarily more masculine values of truth and justice. Mm-hmm. And if you're on the left wing, it's primarily more female values, feminine values of compassion and tolerance and inclusion. Mm-hmm. And those are incredibly vital points, but what you need is the thing that can unite them in the middle, right?
Or integrate them. And that might be a major question, how to integrate it. Because now I don't want to go into all this polarity discussion that is like booming right now in social media. Mm-hmm. But that's a part of you. So yeah, you have these kind of more male qualities, but you will not succeed in creating something new if you don't integrate the part of the compassion.
Yeah.
And sometimes we lose that as men, or we go in the other direction by neglecting our father completely. We would take over the more female qualities from our mother and orient us there. Mm-hmm. But what you just brought up made me think of the speech from Jonathan Pagot. Mm-hmm. And right now, kind of this fits about the story. So you bring this man to the edge, and they experienced something that would change their lives. And that's really good. So, but how is it going to change their life? What are they going to do? Okay, they feel more self-confident. They feel stronger. That's a good thing. But where will they put their energy in? And when Pago brought this with the children of the revolution, they would die. And now, if I look at the process that we did, that we killed the patriarchs and stepped into their position, what I was asking myself is, wouldn't we recreate the same thing again? And connecting it to what we just were talking about. So we would stone these people, yeah, and nobody would stop it. Mm-hmm. So I think afterwards I heard somebody, I think, was it you, said, now you have blood on your hands. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we're starting, I don't want to use the word patriarchy. I want to use a kingdom based on blood. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we are already biased. We're that snake biting her own tail. And what kind of triggered me listening to Bago is like, I would understand it as these mechanisms, these stories, like Jung would say, that archetypical stories would reproduce through us. And it kind of puts us in the situation, or I perceive it that way, that we are victims. We can only kind of be conscious about it, that these stories, these patterns work through us, but then we will repeat it anyway. And that's the moment where I disagree, and where I think that we have other ways. It's always the same triangle of victim, perpetuator, and savior, which is actually the mother, the savior, the perpetuator, the father, and the victim, the child. So meaning that as long as we stay in this child role, what I kind of experienced with my own process, because the thing keeping me from standing up was me still feeling as a victim of my father. And so now that's, for me, kind of the most important point that I'm happy that kind of showed up. Can we change the story? Mm-hmm. And shouldn't that be the main goal of all the man's work? Getting out of the victim role, taking responsibility, but writing your own story, taking from our fathers, appreciating what they have done, understanding that they did their best, forgiving them their faults, taking with gratitude what we want to take, but leave the old story there where it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I think you've done it incredibly well. And then I think I can try and explain it this way, why we've done it the way we've done it, because when guys see this pattern and they see the way out of it, like you've seen, then implementing that in your life is never as simple as it seems like. And so what you typically need is other role models or people who are doing it. Mm-hmm. And the most natural people to do that with would be then to use the people who gave you that insight. So in that case, it might be me or some of the other facilitators at the gathering. And so what I've tried to do, and I don't do this perfectly all the time, but I try and do, is say, well, I'm also still trying to step out of this pattern. Mm-hmm. So I can't tell you how to do it fully. Mm-hmm. You need something greater than me. We need something greater than all of us. Mm-hmm. It's the moment that we think, oh, now I've seen the pattern, now I'm out of it. Mm-hmm. That's when I'm probably captured by the pattern. Mm-hmm. This is a bigger thing than what I think it is. So that's why we don't like just tie it all in a pretty little bow and say, there we go, finished, we've solved the problem, guys. Now you can go on. You never have to worry about this again.
No, because that's simply not true.
I mean, yeah, it's a process that will last the rest of your life, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we try, and because there's a natural human tendency to then put another man on a pedestal and kind of like see him, it's called the halo effect or something like that, right? You think because you got one thing valuable from this person, then you think, oh, then they have all the answers. And the truth of the fact is that like we're also fallible. And so we more and try and use a community model of men who are aware of this pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And then we keep having contact with each other.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so we allow that insight and that awareness to influence our collaboration. And then we have faith in that will lead us further and further and higher and higher. Because when I started this work, you know, like there's been a lot of drama in our work, a lot of drama. And so it's very clear, like, you know, like this is still influencing us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know, when we think we have all the answers, that's when we're in danger. So, mm-hmm. It's a careful approach that I think I'm trying to maximize learning in the long term. By doing it. And I'll also say though, you know, Patrick, that so last year there was a guy from Slovakia who right in the beginning of the exercises where we started doing this stuff, he stood up and he just said, no, we're not doing this. This is wrong. I refuse to be a part of this. Mm-hmm. And the guy, it was Christian Everson, who was faced with this, who was facilitating the One Tribe. He had to use every single part of his ability and several other men who were part of the crew and were helping him to kind of like somehow get this guy to, but he'd never been so challenged in his entire life because it was in front of, you know, 50 other men that he had to, he was getting told like, you're doing is wrong. And so it was really difficult for him. Mm-hmm. But that guy who challenged Christian, he went back to Slovakia and put on a massive Slovakian men's gathering.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very clear to me. Like, where does he get the power and the energy and the clarity to be able to do that? It's because he has that spark of knowing. And it's less important whether it's even completely zoomed in or zoned in, like aligned perfectly. It's more important that he has confidence in the spark.
Mm-hmm.
I really think, because like confidence in the spark and some humility, if it's coupled with humility of wanting to learn, you know, to stand up, to risk being embarrassed and that kind of stuff. I really think that's the way you learn, is mm-hmm. courage and humility, those two things together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we try and create a space in Manifesto where, you know, we treat any challenge very respectfully to the man, but the ideas are often quite harshly dealt with if we think they're bad. and we also welcome people dealing harshly with our ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But keeping it like, you know, we respect each other as human, as people. So it's one of our 10 principles, is respect the man, challenge the idea.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's been a powerful tool for us to grow in that way. Yeah. So for me, it's like, I wasn't surprised when you came to me with the insights, because I mean, you're very honest or humble about, like, you know, that you didn't actually make, but you know, you there was a part where you said like, no, I'm not going to join that. And I also felt like, you know, like disconnected from my group of guys. Mm-hmm. in doing that. And you had the insight yourself, like I could have said it to them. I could have said it to them, which tells me, like, you know, if you, you know, that you're already a long way there. And it's not easy to do that, right? It's not easy. No, it's, you know, not. I have a hard time sometimes, just like I hear my wife saying something and I know like she's wrong, she's misunderstood this. But if I tell her that, she's gonna get upset with me. Mm-hmm. So the easy way out is just like, oh, ignore it and hope that it mm-hmm. doesn't come up again.
Yeah, I know that. I know.
But like I know that in the long term, like I've dedicated my life to being together with this one woman. And so I need to learn to, for myself, to communicate better and to do it with empathy, and also to gain her trust. So I can tell her when I think you know, sometimes I'll be wrong as well, even though I think I'm right, and you know, whatever it is. And sometimes things will land. You know, I spoke to a group of military guys just yesterday, and they said to me, "Yeah, we've all agreed on like the wife's always right. It's always the right the wife that's right." And I just had the thought. I said to them, "Well, I don't. That's not the philosophy I use." But what I thought as well is I thought like, how are you going to lead men into war if you can't even lead your own wife? It's like you have to lead her with love, with understanding, with empathy, but you have to lead her. If you can't do that, if she's always right, it means that you're avoiding conflicts just to be able to, you're not in your integrity as a man.
Yeah.
It's like, we need to learn to step into our integrity and then take responsibility at the same time as well. That's the leadership step.
And it will come back. And actually, you're dishonest to her and to yourself. And I think you if you love that woman, you owe her to be honest and to be direct, because she has also chosen you to evolve, to learn.
That's what she wants. That's why she chose you as a man. She wants to grow as a spiritual being together with you. Find truth. Like, you are the primary compass towards, men have this compass towards truth at a different way, at least, that women have.
And at the same time, she's here. I like the term lead for what a man in his power does, and guide for what a woman does.
Yeah, I like that. And like nudges. She gives like these little, yeah.
And also, you know, like stepping back and let her guide me at the same time, and trust her that if I open up and I'm completely vulnerable, she will cherish that and not take a knife and stab it in. And that needs courage sometimes, mostly in like conflict situations. But
yeah,
every time you did it, afterwards you're happy.
The way, I mean, very practically, the way that I do this is that I create a structure for my wife to be able to tell me everything that she's feeling. And then I try and understand the deeper needs based on that. So we have weekly meetings, and I have created a, based on basically mainly her input, I've created like a shared vision for our relationship that we're moving towards on a 5 to 10 year level. And then we set goals based on that, which I kind of like help to facilitate. And then we have weekly meetings to talk about like how we're moving towards these goals. And I do all of the kind of like writing down and structuring and concluding and stuff like that. But she has to agree with everything, right? Because she has to feel met and heard and understood for her to even want to engage in this. So, so if I start manipulating the process to get my what's good for me in a way that's not good for her, then she's going to rebel. She's going to feel that and not want to fight. So
very good point with the vision and putting up the structure. So we're there having the weekly meetings and rituals. So she's a need of her. What she wishes is me more expressing my positive feelings. And I would love her to also mention and see all the gifts and the resources and the qualities I bring in, because, you know, now as how women are, they would tell you something is not right and something is like disturbing her, but not appreciating the good things you bring in. And so we do this ritual every week that I would express my feelings and she would express her appreciation. But I like your point. It's actually already on my mind for 3, 4, 5 weeks that putting that common vision of the relationship on paper and have it somewhere and remembering it. It's a very good point. So that's the masculine power of creating structure.
Yeah,
and by serving also the woman in a good way.
Yeah, exactly. It's important, like, you know, structure can be good and bad. And it can, you know, it's some says structure is necessary, otherwise you just have chaos. But it's very much how the structure is created and the way it works that's going to determine.
May I come back real quickly? Now, we had quite some topics and we were at the Europeans Men.
Let's bring it. So another, let's go for 5 more minutes or so and then we'll bring things together. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So you were taking up what I said with the patterns that you realize, that you become aware of. And in my words, what you said is, so that's just where the work starts. Because those patterns are so old, so big, so strong, that it needs a hell lot of small little step to step out of them. Mm-hmm. And what I really like, where I resonate strongly, is this is bigger than you. So I'd put it in the word humbleness. Because the moment when you think, that's what you said, you think, now I got it, you're already in the trap again. And you will fall on your nose, and every time it will hurt more. So realize, okay, there is something bigger that is working here. At the same time, I have also the power to change it with small steps by discovering it again and again. So I really love that, what you just said. And I never heard it before. I didn't hear it at the event. And I want to ask the question. I don't know the answer. Probably some of them, of the other guys, will reply in the comments here. How many guys of the gathering got to the point to understand that they got into a situation where they would meet patterns that are a part of themselves, because they are the sons of the sons of the sons of the sons who did that, and realize that now the work is just beginning, and that it could be the goal to slowly step out of these patterns and start, that's my words now, to write your own story.
Yeah. Ooh, I think last year more guys got that than this year, mainly because I think Jonathan Peugeot gave his talk last year, where I think he did an incredibly good job at illustrating that. So I think that message was not as strong this year. It got mixed up with some other stuff. I think Father Hans had a very different function. The meaning was that Father Hans should have done what Jonathan Peugeot did last year. Mm-hmm. But he's just a totally different person, so he did something very different. Mm-hmm. Next year, we have decided that either me or someone else is going to give the what was the Friday morning talk, mm-hmm. where that's the central point. Mm-hmm. And then the kind of, you know, if it's Father Hans or someone else, it'll be a slightly different place that'll be put in, I think, because, so because it is a really important point from the event. I think that it's one of the things that didn't get through as strongly this year as, I mean, it's amazing that things come together so well with so many different men contributing their different stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like everybody has something different that they need to realize from an event like that. It's very individual. I kind of have a definition of love, which I think is the unifying one thing at the center of men's work. Love is that which can integrate all of the uniqueness of all of the diversity that's present in a way that unifies perfectly, but doesn't destroy any of the diversity at the same time as well. So you get to be fully yourself while you're also fully a part of something else.
Now we're getting back to the beginning of our discussion. How to challenge and have a competition and still integrate everybody.
And that's what we started.
Now you just gave an inspiration of where the solution could be and where we have to experiment.
And knowing that the process there for some people is painful, mm-hmm. because for some people truth burns and is the same as death. Actually that's the case for all of us.
But there is no escaping death and there is no escaping pain. You can either choose to go into your pain inside of you, in your heart, emotionally, or it will just come as cancer or something one day because you ignored it. So that's the choice you have. And I think that's also, since I realized that, my management of pain changed a lot. And yeah, I ignore it once, twice, but at some point, okay, now let's go to it. Let's confront it. And it's always behind the pain. There is, if you look back, it was much less painful than you thought before. So that's also a learning. It's kind of training, you know?
Yeah, it's our imagination about pain or our thoughts about pain that are actually far worse than the pain itself. And normally there's gold hidden in the pain. You know, anybody who's had cancer and survived it will normally say that was the most, one of the most valuable experiences of their life that they wouldn't have wanted to be without. Suddenly their life takes on a completely new dimension of meaning, or they find a deeper purpose of being, or, you know, people who've gone through intense sicknesses or something like that often have the same experience. So there's a lot of learning in it when we realize that is a part of life, and it and ends up in death. You know, I don't want to do too much of a plug, but yeah, that's I think our next retreat is going to be here in Denmark in the end of October, about helping men to confront this idea that they will die, and that war is very much a part of life as well, and that it can come to you even if you never want to go to it. So that's deep reality of existence, and it doesn't mean that you have to just give yourself to it either, as you said. You know, even though it's there, you have the ability to stand. There's a very deep idea that can sound extremely fluffy, but that love is more powerful than even death. And that is something that you can say, but actually to believe that to the extent that you actually base your life on it is almost impossible as a human being, I think. Almost impossible to actually do. There's very few people who have managed to do that. Socrates, Jesus Christ, I think these are the best examples we have of people who... Socrates said the unexamined life is not worth living when he was condemned to death. And so he willingly drank poison. Because he knew that the principles that he was standing on were more important than even his own life.
It's dedication.
So he wasn't worried about what the crowd thought. He knew what was right. Patrick, it's been super interesting and exciting talking to you. I've really appreciated it, and I'll put the link to your guys' website and to the article that you wrote from the event if people want to look more into that as well. And there's also, you create a little English bio of yourself to your personal website. So I'll also put that up there as well. Excited to keep in contact and hear what's happening in Switzerland, and to follow with you guys. Hope we get to see each other more in person as well. So it's not just all the Zoom meetings.
I'd appreciate that if we stay in touch and look for synergies. I think there are. I really appreciate this. I kind of got to know you now a little bit, and mostly now in the second half, you showed me a little bit more of yourself, what I really appreciate, and also this humbleness, and where you immediately, you know, you didn't kind of defend yourself. Also, you can handle criticism and take it, yeah, that's true, and go on, and that's a leadership quality which I want to point out and that I saw now. And I thank you for the kind and the attitude you brought into this interview.
It was a pleasure. Thanks, Patrick. We'll be in touch. You've been listening to Conversations on Masculinity with Manifesto. We enjoy good discussions, but far more importantly, we are a real community with plenty of opportunities for you to engage online and in person. So check out our website on manifesto.com to learn more. And if you enjoyed the content here, then please share this podcast with a friend. Thanks.